Imagine people who can't see each other participating in a conversation. Well, that's like radio, you say, or just talking on the telephone, communicating on the internet. Well, here's the difference. Take away all of those means of communication. No talking. You have no idea who you are reaching out to. All you have is a mailing address from someone shut away in a dark room. What would someone like that say?
I've experienced times so difficult and felt boredom and loneliness to such a degree that it seemed to be a physical thing inside. So thick, it felt like it was choking me, trying to squeeze the sanity from my mind, the spirit from my soul, and the life from my body. I've seen and felt hope becoming like a foggy, ephemeral thing, hard to get a hold of, even harder to get a hold of as the years and then decades disappeared, while I stayed trapped in the emptiness of the shoe world.
The words of inmate Billy Blake from a letter read by someone on our staff, currently in his 27th year of solitary confinement in the special housing unit, SHU for short, at the Elmira Correction Facility, as it's officially known, in upstate New York. Here's another voice.
I refuse to embrace the solitude. This is not normal. I'm not a monster and do not deserve to live in a concrete box. I am a man who has made mistakes, true, but I do not deserve to spend the rest of my life locked in a cage. What purpose does that serve? Why even waste the money to feed me? Why not just kill me? Our country has thousands of its people confined to concrete cages. Years pass, lives pass. The suffering does not. Our families suffer most, watching us grow old and go crazy in a cage. This is my biggest pain, knowing my mother and sister suffer with me.
It's a desperate-sounding letter from Jesse Wilson, who's serving time in ADX, the Supermax prison in Colorado, considered to be the most secure and isolating in the world. Jesse Wilson's words are read by Gene Casella. Casella, who along with longtime investigative reporter James Ridgway, have been collecting the letters of inmates from solitary confinement since 2009 through their organization, Solitary Watch. Ridgway says these communications, letters compiled into a newsletter, often serve as an inmate's only connection to the outside world.
Our project aimed at trying to figure out a way in which you could, you know, legally get a look inside so people could actually debate whether it was worth the trouble locking guys for 20 years in 6x9 cells. But it's very hard to get. It's very secret. So the only real way in which courts have let us do it is through the mail. Now, everyone says, you know, prisoners are liars. But most of the people I write to, I don't believe they're liars. Because there's a consistency to all these letters. I get 50 letters a week. And if you've been in the business, as you have and I have, for a length of time, you can sort of begin to tell what's for real and what isn't for real, you know. So you'll get these repeat descriptions of, let's say, the inability to get a shower, and then descriptions of what recreation really is, which is like a dog kennel a couple of times a week, and you can be let loose.
Gene, how did you understand the scale of the use of solitary through this project?
Well, when we began, we thought of it as the biggest domestic human rights crisis that no one had ever heard of. At the time, there was no sense of how many people were in solitary. There have been figures uncovered since then and some new studies done that reveal that the number is between 80 and 100,000 people on any given day are in some form of solitary confinement. So that's really a staggering number, even in a prison system that has 2.2 million people.
What is the feeling that you get from these letters of why these prisoners are reaching out? What kinds of motives do they have?
Well, a lot of the prisoners reach out very simply because they never talk to anybody. They don't see any humans. Just the idea that they might make contact with somebody in the outside world is a big deal for them. For example, people will sometimes ask us, could we have a picture? And you think, well, maybe they want a picture of the Acropolis or something, some famous thing. All they want a picture of is like a main street in some town. These guys haven't been out. Some of them, like one guy we write to a lot, has been in 27 years, solitary. Anyhow, they'll want a picture, and then the pictures are often seized as contraband. For example, the Oxford Book of World History had a map, I think, of the 16th century on the cover. That book was seized from somebody who wanted to read it because they thought it was an escape plan.
An escape plan.
An escape plan. Mm-hmm.
How many letters do you get a week?
Well, I get 50 letters about a week.
And you read them all?
Yeah, I mean, the letters are sort of like broken up. I mean, there's some letters that guys send that they want to be placed on our mailing list to get the newsletter. But there are others then that want help. And a lot of them go through their legal cases, you know, and we tell them, you know, we're not lawyers. We can't do anything. I'm sorry, but we can't do anything. Other ones talk about something maybe more complicated, like they have, there's one guy, he has glaucoma. I have glaucoma, so we write each other every so often, and he's had glaucoma, he says, for 2 years, and he hasn't been able to see a doctor. So he says, I'm getting blinder, you know, I'm getting blind. So I was mentioning this case to a social worker, and she said, oh, yeah, well, you know, you can't believe guys like that because he just wants you to write him up, and then he thinks maybe he's going to get out. Well, see, if you're confronted by this kind of stuff from the social workers, what can you do? I mean, you're sort of like buffered from reaching out and asking for help. I mean, I get letters from people who want to commit suicide. I have to sort of like figure out, well, is this going to happen now or is this some future thing? And some of them clearly are about to happen. And in one or two cases, I've really tried to get into it and find some way of having somebody see this person.
What does that feel like?
I mean, I feel every day that, like, I can't stop this. You know, it's like a flow of water out of a pipe or something.
What do you hope to accomplish here?
Well, our project is very, very simple, and it aims at simply making public what goes on in solitary. But, of course, personally, I think we probably both agree that we would go sort of like the UN rapporteur. His thing is, I think...
15 days.
Yeah, 15 days in solitary. That would be the policy.
And that after that, it really rises to the level of torture or at least cruel, inhuman, and degrading punishment according to the definitions of the UN.
I always wonder, like, what about the judges? I mean, don't the judges ever wonder what happens to the people that they send away? And
I think the incredible dehumanization of people in prison is what allows this to continue in the same way that the dehumanization of African Americans allowed slavery to go on for so many years. And that someday we're going to look back and say, how could we have done this to human beings?
Well, James and Gene, thank you so much.
Thank you, John.
Thank you so much.
James Ridgway and Gene Casello are co-directors of Solitary Watch. Their book, authored with Sarah Sheward, is Hell is a Very Small Place, Voices from Solitary Confinement. It's out this month. To see pictures of the volume of letters they receive, and it's a sizable one, go to thetakeaway.org.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.